Welcome into Scrambled Eggs, everyone, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on Cracked Sidewalks. Joe McCann, Phil Bush with you. Stinging a little from the disappointing weekend, I guess, Phil, but there's still plenty to talk about in today's show.
Yeah, it was not an unexpected result, but it sucks nonetheless.
Yeah, it's no matter how good Wisconsin is, they could be five-time defending national champions, and it would still suck to lose to Wisconsin.
Man, but we have had to have pissed off to have that happen.
Yeah, I would question everything I believe in. But we're going to break down the game to Wisconsin, and then we will move forward with some the exciting things coming in the addition of Luke Fisher and what that's going to mean for the team heading forward. But looking at the game on Saturday, Phil, the result was not unexpected. We were basically hit the line in Vegas right where it was. It was teetering between 9 and 11 points all weekend. So we basically did exactly what Vegas expected, basically what a lot of Marquette fans expected. And I guess I'll go ahead and just state the obvious. Defensively, I thought Marquette played really well. Unfortunately, offensively, they just couldn't get anything going against Wisconsin's defense.
Well, I think Wisconsin, Marquette, in my estimation, actually performed better than I anticipated. The defense was much better. I expected good defense, but I thought they played some pretty great defense, quite frankly, with a few breakdowns that really cost them. Offensively, I thought there was flashes, but I just don't, with the composition of the roster right now, there was just no way that Marquette was going to be able to be successful with their offense, because there was absolutely no size to help them out, and that's all Wisconsin is size. So it was going to be a rough day. I think the fact that we were down six with the ball with a minute 10 to go, color me wildly optimistic, but that was better than I thought we were going to be.
Yeah, and then Tim Kaminsky hit the length three, and it was basically church from there. But right. Yeah, watching Marquette play offense earlier in that game, I was thinking, how is Marquette going to get any points today? Because they couldn't go inside, because every time they tried to go inside, Wisconsin's defense just swarmed to whoever was there, whether it was Taylor or Anderson or one of the guards trying to get to the rack. Anything within 5 feet was just a nightmare to try to convert on Saturday. And then outside shooting, it's been well documented this isn't a great shooting team, but Marquette actually shot the ball fairly well from three. 42%.
Right.
In hindsight, I wish they would have maybe shot a little more. But then again, Wisconsin defense did not really allow that many. It's not like they had wide open looks from three all day. They took them when they had them and shot for a pretty good percentage.
Well, I it was kind of interesting because you alluded to the shooting issues. That's one of the I never would have anticipated a Marquette team where the shooting percentages were inverted, where we shot better from three than we did from two. That's kind of remarkable when you think about it. I do think they had some open looks. One of the things is, like, Juan Anderson. He was one for two, from beyond the arc. They were giving him shots. He wasn't pulling the trigger. I think the offense hesitated. They had some mid-range looks that they just didn't want to take and tried to force it to the rim, and I get it. The lack of size for Marquette essentially allowed Wisconsin to overplay on the guards, to really pressure on the arc to try and take away some of that shooting. So the guards could drive. Like Derek Wilson, Dwayne Wilson, Trey J, Carlino could all get to the hoop. But the problem was Frank Kaminsky was waiting there, and there was no way Steve Taylor was going to hold him off. So Kaminsky could rove at will to block shots. And I think Trey J and Derek Wilson, I don't know that they hit the rim with their layups at all. It was either blocked or off the side of the backboard every time.
Yeah, I did kind of cringe every time those guys tried to go inside and just kind of go into the trees and try to hope something would happen and draw a foul or whatever, and they just didn't get the call. Derek Wilson, Dwayne Wilson, and Juwan Johnson combined were 1 of 18 on the day.
And yeah, that's a lot not going to win you a game.
Yeah, and a lot of those misses are just, like I said, just going to the rack hoping for the best and just slamming it off the backboard or whatever. And Wojo even kind of alluded to that. He didn't say it specifically, but I think that's kind of what he was talking about when, he was of course asked about his team's offensive performance after the game, and he said, for the most part, the only thing he kind of regrets is some poor decisions on offense and taking some bad shots and forcing some shots. That was kind of paraphrasing what he said. And I definitely think he was talking about just driving to the basket when there was just absolutely nothing there, and when you're going at three red shirts and hoping something's going to happen down there, and it just didn't. And you know, maybe that didn't make a huge difference on the outcome of the game as far as wins or losses, but you know, in hindsight, you can always look back and say, well, maybe it would have worked better if you tried to pass the ball around a little bit more and try to take a few more threes, because I think that would have been the only way Marquette was going to hang in. And you know, in the end, it was just a bad matchup, and Wisconsin is just an impossible team for Marquette to match up with right now, as you said, with the current way the roster is.
Right. Well, and we'll talk about Fisher in significantly more detail coming up, but I think even if he's a complete stiff, like a poor man's Usman Baro, even if he's that in that Wisconsin game, he makes the difference. He's at least got size that some of the rebounds, you know, where Wisconsin gets 3-4 rebounds in a row, where they played really good defense and just couldn't wrangle the rebound. And when driving to the lane, Kaminsky has to either honor him by staying on him, or Fisher is able to kind of seal the lane, allow the driver to get to the hoop. So he would have made a huge difference. So given what the team had, you know, it's one of those things. There's no such thing as a moral victory, I don't think, and there's no such thing as I feel really good after getting relatively hammered by our rival. But there was a lot more positive out of that loss than I've seen in a while for a Marquette loss.
Yeah, you mentioned the difference he would have made in the middle. You know, whenever Taylor got the ball, you know, within 5 feet, you know, Taylor, he can't bring the ball below his waist. He can't really even bring the ball below his shoulders going up against Wisconsin. He had to, like, basically, if you're going to go inside against Wisconsin, he either needs to be getting it on an alley-oop, or he needs to, like, keep that ball above his head and just go up instantly, because otherwise the team was just going to swarm to him and get right there. And you mentioned the rebounds. That was probably the most frustrating thing. The box score says Wisconsin had 14 offensive rebounds. There was one possession in the second half where I swear they had 14 offensive rebounds on just that one possession.
Yeah, and it ran down the clock like 2 minutes.
Yeah, and it ended with a Gosser three, and that was just a killer. And yeah, when you have, you know, Marquette did its best on the rebounds, but you know, when each player on the other side averages 4 inches taller than you, it's tough to get those rebounds, no matter how hard you're working or how hard you're boxing out. And you know, the zone defense did maybe cost some assignments on boxing out as well, but I think that was a trade you were willing to make, quite honestly, because I thought, as we've said already, the zone defense did work pretty well for the most part. I thought they didn't really, you know, lose their guys too often as far as on shooting. Now, on rebounds, yes, maybe they did. But as far as not allowing Wisconsin too many open shots or easy looks, I thought they really did an outstanding job. But the size disadvantage was just so evident in the rebounding, because there were so many times where the ball was just kind of bouncing around under the hoop and tipped up, and eventually Wisconsin came down with it. In the end, they out-rebounded Marquette by 13, and it seemed like it was a lot more than that.
It felt like it was 100.
It really did. So, yeah, I mean, I really don't know what else to say as far as, you know, second-guessing or things I would have done differently. I mean, there's really not all that much. The only thing I could say, I just wish they made a few more shots.
Well, I wish Carlino didn't turn the ball over with a minute 10 when, you know, down six.
That was a killer.
That was a killer, especially it was relatively unforced. But I don't know that there's a lot more you could say. I mean, it really is one of those where you kind of go, man, we gave it our shot. We just didn't have the right horses. All right, let's learn. But I will say another positive I will take from this, and maybe this rolls in conjunction with the results from Orlando and whatnot, but my biggest concern or item of interest going into this season was, can Wojo coach? I think it's fair to say that we've answered that question. He can absolutely coach. He can make in-game adjustments. I mean, look at how Marquette came out after halftime in the Wisconsin game. They were down 10. The crowd was generally out of it. And within the first 2.5 minutes, Marquette got 4 stops in a row and scored 7 points and was only down 3. And the crowd was definitely way back into it. So, I mean, he made adjustments out of halftime. And say what you will of Bo Ryan. Bo Ryan's not a slouch of a coach.
Right.
So Wojo was able to kind of go toe-to-toe from a strategic standpoint and a coaching standpoint with Bo Ryan, he just didn't quite have the horses that Bo Ryan did to be able to pull off the upset.
Yeah, I definitely look forward to future matchups when the talent level on each side is a little closer. And because I think there was really not much doubt in my mind that Wojo knew what he was doing as a coach. I just needed to see it for myself just to confirm what I had assumed, that a 15-year assistant of Mike Krzyzewski would know what he's doing as a coach. And he does. And it is comforting to know that Marquette is in the hands of a guy who can make adjustments in-game and is not afraid to just drastically change things over the course of a week, as he's done with the defense, because he is now pretty committed to the zone, and we'll see if he's going to be that way once Fisher jumps into the mix. But he knew what he had started with defensively was really rough, and the zone has kind of changed things for the better over the last few weeks. Granted, you know, the losses to Michigan State and Wisconsin were tough, but the defense is much better, and I'm anxious to see exactly how he continues to develop this team as far as what kind of adjustments he makes X's and O's wise and how players improve under him, because I think that's going to be a big factor over the next few years as well, as how some of these young guys develop under Wojo.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be, it takes some of the pressure off. And one of the things we've talked about endlessly is that this team and the way it's made up and what the schedule looks like, there are going to be games where Marquette looks totally outclassed, and then, you know, when they shouldn't, see, you know, Nebraska, Omaha, and there are going to be games where they really don't deserve, or, you know, you wouldn't think going in that they're going to be wildly successful and they're really competitive, like the Michigan State game. But if you look at the results to date, again, there aren't moral victories, but they've gone toe-to-toe with three top 20 Big Ten programs and have
lost by exactly 11 to all of them, by the way, oddly enough. Stats that mean nothing. But
right,
yeah.
Absolutely nothing. I that's like getting a fortune cookie that says you will get rich today. It means nothing, but it's good to hear.
Yeah.
So, they've gone toe-to-toe with top 20 programs. They've won some games. They lost one game they maybe shouldn't have. But, you know, I tell you what, the NJIT, you know, near loss doesn't look as bad now given what they just did to Michigan. I don't think any of this changes my perspective on this team's probably a 500 or a little bit better. But I think they're going to be better at the end of the season than I thought they were. I think there's a lot of pieces there that's going to make them successful, and I didn't see anything out of the Wisconsin game that changes my mind on that.
Yeah, I agree. You mentioned the NJIT thing. That was pretty cool that they went out there and beat Michigan State. Another positive, hey, Tennessee went out and beat Kansas State, so that's something.
Yeah.
And then, on the flip side, though, Georgia Tech went out and lost to something called South Carolina Upstate.
Yeah, I don't know where that is. I'm going to assume it's in South Carolina, but that doesn't
probably seem somewhere upstate in South Carolina.
Oh, could be. Or they could just totally throw us for a loop and they could be in southern Georgia.
Maybe so. Yeah. But I'm not really sure how much I'm going to be paying attention to the RPI, because UW Green Bay was number one in the RPI this past Wednesday.
National title for Brian Wardle?
Brian Wardle padding that resume for the next time the Marquette job comes open, I guess.
Yeah.
But they did get a nice win, though. They beat Miami.
Yeah, that's true.
So, oh, there's that. But we're not going to worry too much about resumes and RPI as much as we are the next game. And the rest of the season now is exciting, Phil, because now the addition we've been anticipating for a year now is we can finally see him on the court, is Luke Fisher is now going to be eligible for Marquette's next game. Marquette does not have a game this coming week because of final exams, so a full week to, rest and recover, but also, I'm sure Luke Fisher has been involved in game planning and stuff, you know, ever since he's been on campus, but now they get to spend a full week planning to actually use him in a game, whereas maybe in the past he was more, you know,
practice fodder.
Yeah, practice. You know, he was playing the role of Frank Kaminsky in practice or something like that.
Right.
But now he gets to play the role of Luke Fisher. And so the questions that arise with him, you know, for the positive, obviously, how does he affect the team? How does he affect the lineup? I'm going to start with the obvious, Phil, and hopefully rebounding and inside play should improve tremendously. Even if, you know, Fisher is not like an NBA player, but still, just to have a guy who is 6'11", a former top 100 prospect, and by all accounts, a guy who can maybe shoot it a little bit from, you know, mid-range, but mostly is a guy who's going to play well with his back to the basket.
Right. Well, I mean, even in Wojciechowski's post-game show after on 540 ESPN after the Wisconsin game, he came out and said, we're a totally different team with Luke Fisher in the, so we'll see what that looks like. And I think it just gives them a whole different look because, players the most impacted are going to be Burton and Taylor because they start to play in their probably primary positions. Mm-hmm. And Fisher, again, I go back to the, even if he's a complete stiff, he at least takes up space. His height, by definition, if he can get his arms over his shoulders, will be good for 3 or 4 rebounds a game. He can set screens. He's a threat to, to at least, put offensive rebounds and convert them into points that we don't currently have right now. So I think it can do nothing but improve the team. It also probably improves the drives, so the guards driving to the basket will have better lanes to the basket, which means when they go to shoot, they should have better shots because they're going to have to sag off them a little bit for fear of them driving too much. So I think it changes a lot of things, again, without him being, the next aircraft carrier. I mean, just his presence will be enough to change the dynamics of the team.
Yeah, hopefully, you add him, maybe you're going to win 1 or 2 games that you otherwise would have lost, right, by just having that extra little presence there in the middle, and we'll see how big a difference that makes once we get into Big East play. But, like we alluded to earlier, Steve Taylor and Juan Anderson have been doing their best down there playing the five, but it's not where they belong. It's way out of position for both of those guys.
Right.
And now I would think you would see Juan Anderson almost never at the five, actually. It's going to be either Fisher or Taylor.
Yep.
Because, Fisher's not going to play 40 minutes a game, but I would imagine he's going to play as much as he can, and Taylor can step away and be where he's hopefully a little more comfortable at the four. And I guess that leads to kind of the next question, Phil. How do you see everybody moving around? Because I think overall everyone may lose a few minutes to Fisher as everyone kind of scoots over a little bit, maybe with the exception of maybe Derek and Dwayne Wilson. Their minutes probably aren't going to change much, but a guy like Juan Anderson may move out to the three a little bit more, and Burton plays the three a little bit more. Maybe that costs some minutes for some guys like Johnson and Carlino, and maybe the Wilsons a little bit, who would have kind of been the third guard in the past a little bit. How do you kind of see the minutes shaking out, and how do you see everyone kind of moving around?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's a podcast, so I mean, I can literally say whatever I want just about, and no one's going to hold it against me, I don't think. But I guess I would say that one of the things that I'm curious about is with Fisher. Small sample size, but he was foul prone at Indiana. So it'd be interesting. I think a lot of this is predicated on how many minutes he can play without fouling. Mm-hmm. Let's assume he doesn't have foul trouble. I'm thinking Fisher's going to get 20 to 25 minutes. Again, if he's competent, he's going to get 20 to 25 minutes a game. And then the 15 to 20 minutes that he's not in there go to Steve Taylor. So I think Taylor probably overall in the grand scheme of things loses probably 5-8 minutes of playing time overall. Cause I think, he'll play the four some with Fisher, but I think actually the bigger beneficiary is going to be Burton, who's going to get more minutes at the true three and the four. And he's just hasn't been on early in the season, and I think he's going to see some more minutes as a result because they have a rim protector in Fisher available.
Yeah, I think he's really kind of looking forward to what Fisher could bring because, Burton was really able to, have some really nice games last year when he was playing alongside Otule and Gardner, when those guys were drawing the opponent's biggest defenders down low, and when hopefully Burton is able to move a little more freely, playing the three or the four with Fisher down there. And I'm looking to, and I know the guards have got to be looking forward to having that big guy to dump it into.
Yeah.
You know, just that one extra pass to get to the guy who's 6'11", who could just lay it up or dunk it so easily. And just, you would hope the team's field goal percentage would be affected positively by that, that they can just get a few more easy buckets. And I know a few more easy buckets would have been great to have on Saturday against Wisconsin.
I'm definitely Fisher's curious to see exactly practicing his layups semester off.
Right. Yeah, I'm curious to see what Fisher brings. Like, is he a rim protector? Can he block shots? And I'm curious to see how he affects the defense. I would guess they would probably, for the most part, stick with that 2-3 zone. I guess I don't see why not, because I don't think adding a great center would necessarily make you want to switch to man-to-man if your zone has been the best thing for you.
Well, it'll be interesting because, I mean, when they were playing man-to-man, one of the issues they had, which was why Omaha and NJIT burned them, because they're a very fast and athletic team, you know, they were playing a lot of high-pressure, you know, ball defense and, you know, were really out on the arc. But there was no rim protector behind them, you know, for those guards when they turned the corner to stop that drive. I wonder if Fisher is a rim protector, do we see more man to man? That one's the biggest unknown, is do we stay in the 2-3 or do we start to work in more man to man with Fisher back? I think that's the real question of what Fisher brings. And I guess I would ask you, you know, aside, what defense do you see them kind of playing predominantly, and actually which player is probably the most impacted in a negative way from Fisher coming back? Who gets the fewest minutes now with Fisher being back? Because somebody's going to kind of lose out, I think, in this.
Yeah, I would say, first of all, I would expect them to mostly stick with the 2-3, just because I think a lot of the guards are getting more comfortable in that, and like you said, they kind of got beat pretty badly. But, you know, if Les Fisher is proven to be just an out-of-this-world shot blocker, and we don't think people are going to be going to the rim as much, but I'm not sure that's the case. I think we'll stick with the 2-3. Now, to answer your question as far as whose minutes suffer, I would guess, honestly, maybe Cohen a little bit, because I think as you move Anderson and Burton out to playing more 3 and 4, I think he might lose out a little bit. Hopefully still plays a little bit, because he is one of the guys who can shoot the ball, or at least right. Shown a little bit of an ability to shoot the ball. He had one big three against Wisconsin. So, but I don't think you're going to see one guy take a significant hit for minutes. I think everyone's just going to lose a little bit. I think, you know, you take, you know, 5 minutes away from Taylor, a few minutes away from Juan Anderson, a few minutes away from Cohen, and then maybe a few minutes from the guards, because some of those bigger guys are going to be playing the three more. Yeah. You know, you take between 2 and 5 minutes away from everybody, and I think that kind of adds up to enough minutes for Luke Fisher. So I don't think one guy is necessarily going to be, like, disappear from the rotation who is used to playing a lot. I think everyone gives up a little bit, and I think the team is better as a whole. But if I had to pick out one guy, I would say maybe we see Cohen just a little bit less, maybe because he has struggled a little bit defensively. But, you know, any guy who shows an ability to shoot the ball, I think Wojo's going to find a way to get him in the game.
Yeah, to answer my own question, I think actually Juwan Johnson probably suffers the most from a minute standpoint. I think you're right that Cohen's struggled a little bit, but he actually, for the first time all season since they went to the 2-3, previously Cohen had been playing on the wing in the zone and had struggled. And then against Wisconsin, they moved him up top with Matt Carlino. And I thought he did really well up there. His length bothered people. And I think you can see sparks of his offensive talent. I think Juwan Johnson, surprisingly, because I would have expected a lot more, I think he's probably the one that struggled the most this season on both ends of the floor. Because there was a couple of times, one very clearly, I remember in yesterday's game when Kaminsky had the ball down in the low post, and I don't remember who the two were. It was Steve Taylor and somebody else had kind of doubled up on Kaminsky, and all of a sudden Johnson came wandering down, not quite triple teaming, but definitely not covering Gosser, and Kaminsky simply passed it out, and Gosser got a wing three that kind of broke Marquette's back a little bit. I think Johnson struggled a little bit, and if the minutes are going to come from someone in particular, I think it's going to be him, because I think Cohen has to date sort of earned the minutes, and I'm kind of excited about what he's got, and I'd like to see him getting some more minutes. And I think ideally, if it's not Johnson, the other thing is, and this is, I'm going to put a huge caveat on this, because there's a lot of folks that seem to have a negative opinion for some reason, but I do think Derek Wilson getting 5 less minutes a game would be ideal. I think he's good, and he's going to have to play. Well, I guess I shouldn't say good, but I think he's good at what he does, and he has to play. He's yeah. one of our better options.
He has a role.
Right. Well, yeah. that and the reason I kind of bring that up is there was a couple of Marquette dude bros behind us at the game that were talking about, you know, bench Derek Wilson forever. And, you know, there seems to be a segment of the Marquette fan base that is decidedly anti-Derek Wilson. And he is what he is. He's not an all Big East player, nor is he ever going to be. But he's a solid option for what he is. Very good defender, a good leader, doesn't turn over the ball, can drive the ball in the right circumstances, and he's just a contributor. I think he's, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, he's probably the best option we have as one of the top three guards right now.
Yeah, I can agree. He does have a role to do all those things you said. When you need a defensive stop, he can create at times for other players. He's a pretty good passer, and like you said, he doesn't turn the ball over. He's probably the most secure ball handler. When Marquette's trying to beat a press, the only time you don't want him in there is late in the game, yeah. when a team's trying to foul and put him on the free throw line. But, yeah, Derek Wilson has a role, and he'll play a lot. But, yeah, maybe it might be south of 30 from here on out, as opposed, because
yeah,
he actually
that
has
that would be ideal.
Yeah. So, and but you bring up a good point about Juwan Johnson. You know, when a team is struggling, the guys on the bench are always the fan favorites. Just like, you know, in the NFL, the favorite player for the fans is always the backup quarterback when
right.
the team's not winning. You know,
see,
and
Johnny,
you know,
Manziel.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, Juwan Johnson was a fan favorite last year. And, yeah, I'm guilty of that as anyone. But everyone wanted to see him play more last year when the team was struggling. And he's gotten a few more chances to play this year. And he really hasn't broken out yet. I mean, the only really good game he's had was that first one against Tennessee Martin. But he still hasn't quite found his shot. And, yeah, he does struggle on the defensive end. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if his minutes do suffer a little bit as Fisher kind of bumps everyone aside in the rotation and everyone goes down a position from the, you know, 5 to the 4 to the 4 to the 3 and all that. So, yeah, and hopefully he just keeps developing, because you see the flashes. I mean, you right. see the athleticism, and, you know, he is a scorer, and I want him to be that, but he's just not quite there
right.
yet.
Well, and, you know, I just look at it from the perspective of, you know, if in an ideal world with the players we have, with they've shown, what players do you think need more minutes or more yeah. time? And I think Burton and Cohen need more minutes because they've shown, you know, either in the past or this season, they've shown more flashes of good than Juwan Johnson has to this date for me. That based on what I've seen. So that's kind of why I put it that way. It's not that I, you know, I don't like Juwan Johnson's game. I haven't seen enough that says, hey, you know what, we need to get this guy more minutes because he's getting close. I think he's a little further behind Cohen and Burton than I would have anticipated.
Yeah, he is. And, you know, hopefully he comes around. And sometimes it takes guys a few years to really kind of come into their own at this level. So we'll see if he's able to get there. I'm also curious if Wojo goes to a quote-unquote big lineup, which he can a little bit. I mean, by Marquette standards, if he plays, you know, Fisher and Taylor and Anderson all together at times. Because that would be a much bigger lineup than we've been used to of the last few games here. You know, and I think Juan Anderson has shown a pretty good ability to play the perimeters, and because, you know, there was a time there that we thought he was going to move out there permanently. So I'm curious to see if he plays all those guys together, but I think for the most part he'll space them out because they're basically going to be substituting for each other.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's the thing is, you know, this is kind of a mini version of the drooling dream everyone had at the beginning of last season when we were going to play Otule and Gardner together for 35 minutes a game and no one could ever stop us. is the playing Steve Taylor and Luke Fisher together. I mean, it's clearly it's not on the same level. But right. you're not going to play them together all that much simply because they need to be able to play, you know, their minutes need to go to the same position. You know, so you may see 5 or 6 minutes where Taylor and Fisher play together, but it's not going to be that, you know, it's not really going to be that much. Again, because you've got other options like Juan and Burton that you don't have to play Taylor and Fisher together. But I think against certain teams you may see it.
Yeah. So not that who starts matters all that much because it's, in the end it's about minutes, but what would your guess be for the starting lineup against Arizona State?
Ooh, that's tough because, you know, you wonder, does Fisher, just for the tip alone, again, even if Fisher's a stiff, you got to have him in there for the tip. So I think Fisher starts. I honestly think, based on performance and outlook, Juan Anderson starts at the four. I think Taylor, you know, kind of moves to the bench as a bench player. And then I would say it's Matt Carlino, Derek Wilson, and Dwayne Wilson.
Yeah, I agree. The only spot I'm unsure of is kind of the whether it's Derek Wilson or Steve Taylor as the other starter.
Yeah.
And because you could go with Dwayne, or maybe, you know, I guess you could have Carlino come off the bench as a sixth man, but I think he's proven to be one of Marquette's better offensive players. So I think he'll get a ton of minutes. I'm just curious what the starting lineup looks like. I said, you know, who starts isn't necessarily nearly as important as who's going to finish and who plays the most minutes. I'm just curious what the first five is going to be that Wojo sends out there, and we'll find out on the 16th. So that we got a few days before that happens. This podcast has a little shelf life to it. Hopefully, as long as there's no breaking news.
Yeah, if our luck holds, there'll be breaking news roughly half hour after I post this.
Yeah, but I do agree with you that I would be stunned if Fisher does not start. I think they're going to get him in there right away. Like I said, just for the tip,
right?
Just to get him out there and try to win the tip, and. We'll go from there because I think everyone's dying to see exactly what he can bring, and let's get him in there, get him a few buckets, and see what this team's going to look like for the rest of the season, because I think the Arizona State game, as we kind of shift gears to talk about the next game here, this is going to give us a good look at exactly what kind of team Marquette is going to bring to Big East play, because ultimately that's the most important thing this year is how the team is going to do in conference play as Marquette tries to fight for some kind of postseason birth, whether it's NCAA or NIT or whatever they're going to be fighting for at the end. And I think against Arizona State, you know, it's going to be good to have Fisher because Arizona State does have some size, not necessarily a ton, but they do have a couple guys who are 6'10 or taller. Eric Jacobson is going to be the guy that is probably going to cause the most problems. He's averaging 10 points, 8 boards for Arizona State. So it's going to be great to have him just to go up against another big guy. So hopefully the rebounding advantage is not as bad for the opponent as it has been in the past few games. But Arizona State, a team, Phil, that they're 5-3 on the year. Yeah, 5-3. This is only their second real road game of the year. They've lost three games, all pretty close, though, to, you know, Power 5 teams. They lost to Maryland, they lost to Alabama, and their most recent one, they lost a one-point game in College Station to Texas A&M. So how do you see the matchup with Arizona State?
It's going to be interesting. I think this is going to be one of those frustrating games because, unfortunately, it's going to be great to have Luke Fisher back, but you can practice all you want with players and as a team, but it doesn't really have the same impact of actual gameplay together. So I think there's going to be a lot of growing pains involved with this game. I also want people to realize that, you know, Luke Fisher is not going to be the savior. It's not like all of a sudden we're going to rebound everything, game over. We're simply going to dominate the boards and whatnot.
Yes, but he is not Dwight Howard, but he is a good player.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves. So there's going to be a significant learning curve, and so it'll be interesting thing. I actually think Marquette will struggle offensively again in this game against Arizona State, especially with the height. But I think we'll see some improvement. I don't know. How do you see it going?
I hope the team is actually going to be really excited, and I just hope there's not like just a letdown from the Wisconsin game. I think they're going to have over a week to get over it, and you know, maybe I'm setting myself up for disappointment here. Like, I guess there is maybe there is some rust you could talk about with Luke Fisher, but it's not like this is the first time he's picked up a basketball in a year. I mean, he's been practicing with this team ever since he showed up on campus.
Right.
And, you know, it's not like the offense is going to be new to him. It's not like anything they run is going to be a mystery to him. I mean, he knows everything that Marquette runs. He knows what all the plays are, the difference are. Difference is now that he's actually playing in the game as opposed to helping the team to prepare for a game. So I don't think he's going to be, you know, maybe the game speed will be a little different, but I really don't think Luke Fisher is going to be lost out there.
Right.
And I honestly expect him to have a decent game. I expect him to have a nice impact. I expect, like, when the game's over, I expect to, like, look at the box score and say, okay, he helped us with rebounds a little bit, and he contributed a few points, and that was maybe a difference in the game. I really hope Marquette can win this game, honestly. I think Marquette is actually a slight favorite in the game.
Are they really?
I think I saw Anonymous Eagle tweeting that KenPom actually has Marquette as a slight favorite in this game.
Well, and in looking at it, maybe, you know, you kind of look at it from a pure roster composition. I really can't say that word today. And Arizona State has a lot of height, so you go, oh, okay. But when you dig into the stats, what's interesting is Arizona State is 223rd in the country in rebounds per game. So now they're 33rd in overall field goal percentage. So, you know, they're hit a lot of shots, but of the shots that go up, you know, that don't go in, they don't get a lot of the rebounds. So maybe, you know, that's not as critical as Marquette typically would be in its weakness on rebounding. So, you know, I it should be a game they win, but again, the combination of this team doesn't have a ton of experience yet, so this is a classic, perhaps on paper, the game should be one Marquette wins, but they may find ways to accidentally lose. plus, when you factor in Luke Fisher and, you know, just an entirely new lineup. I mean, Wojo's got to see, you know, practice and real games, or as Allen Iverson kind of pointed out, that they're two very different things. So Wojo's going to have to learn what this team is with right. Luke Fisher, and that's going to be going on in this game, and that's tough to learn that and, you know, and win a Division I game. It'll be interesting. I think they win, but it's going to be tough.
Yeah, I think what, you know, you allude to the point there that, you know, Wojo probably has a good idea what his team looks like with Luke Fisher, but he just wants to see it to make sure.
Right.
That, like, he doesn't want to, like, put Luke Fisher out there and, like, turns out he gets a totally different player than what he thinks he has. Or, you know, maybe he finds out that Juan Anderson and Steve Taylor their games don't mesh with Fisher's the way he thought they would.
Right.
I guess he's going to learn and just maybe confirm what his own suspicions were, what he's seen in practice. And, like I said, they have a full week to kind of maybe work out some of the kinks there, but I guess they're going to
Could have Luke Fisher get out there and commit three fouls in a minute and a half. I mean,
yeah, and you may never find out. Well, we'll find out against Alabama A&M.
Yeah, this was a great experiment. I guess we're right back to where we were before. So, you know, that's who knows what you're going to get, and that's why they play the games. I kind of wish it wasn't quite as long a layoff, as you know. So they have finals this week.
Right.
And typically Marquette would play on the Saturday following finals, but the Arizona State's game was scheduled a while ago, and it was scheduled for that Tuesday, so that was too quick a turnaround to go Saturday, Tuesday. But it'll be interesting to see how that layoff kind of impacts things.
Yeah, and I will add this. You know, granted, the way, you know, we kind of look at this team and the pretty low expectations for this year, I know the idea of this team making the tournament is really not something we even think about or talk about, but I don't think the players think about that. I mean, they go out there trying to win every game, and I bring this up because this is the last chance for Marquette to get a nice non-conference win.
Yeah.
And so I think maybe that might be something they're thinking about. Like, you know, guys, let's get one really good win in non-conference. And, you know, right now their best, quote-unquote, best win, I guess, is Tennessee.
The way Georgia Tech lost that game.
Yeah, and then maybe their second best win is NJIT right now.
Probably.
So, you know, I think a team is always going to get excited when a recognizable name comes to your house. You know, a team like Arizona State. Granted, even if Arizona State is not going to be a great team in the Pac-12 this year, I don't really know how they stack up to the rest of the Pac-12. We'll wait and see on that. But I think anytime a recognizable opponent is going to come on, and it's going to be this is a Fox Sports 1 game, I do believe.
Yes, it is.
So, you know, it's a nationally televised game. I think the team's going to be excited and want to kind of make a statement and say, look, this is the team we're going to bring to Big East play. And I think the team is going to be excited. I hope they're going to play really well. And we'll see how involved Fisher can be and how the defense looks with him in it. And if they can keep up the same defensive intensity they've had and then just add Fisher's height to just give you that added element and help with the rebounds and shot blocking and get a few more easy baskets, yeah, I think the team's going to be a little bit better. And I think hopefully it's going to be enough to nip Arizona State at home. I'm going to say it's going to be a close win for Marquette, something in the range of 63-61. That's when I would be my prediction for the Arizona State.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think one of the factors is going to be the crowd, as weird as that is, as weird as that sounds. One, I thought the crowd was kind of circling back to Wisconsin. I thought the crowd was fantastic for the Wisconsin game, especially because I was afraid, given the relative success this season or the relative expectations of the teams this season, might have lended more Badger fans to show up at the game. So the Bradley Center was quite electric, and the crowd was relatively in it the whole game. But being after finals, the students were fantastic in the Wisconsin game. The students probably, you know, there's going to be the six students that are actually from the Milwaukee area that'll be in attendance. Maybe you'll get a few of them up from the Chicago area. You know, and it'll be curious to see if the, you know, it's a Tuesday night game. If it's good crowd and it's good sized crowd, I think the team kind of feeds off of that. I'm going to predict, actually, I think just the way Arizona State plays, they shoot a lot, they play fast. I think it's going to be a relatively high scoring game. I think it's going to be something on the order of 75-69 Marquette.
All right. I'll take it.
Yeah.
Hopefully we're both right.
Yeah.
So, just the fact of, you know, Marquette gets a win, because I think that would be just a nice springboard to give us, to build up a little optimism and excitement for Big East play. And because we've got, Marquette's got three games that are hopefully wins.
not everything's guaranteed. The bye games aren't guaranteed, we've discovered.
They're certainly not. But there are three games after Arizona State: Alabama A&M, North Dakota, and Morgan State, before they begin Big East play on New Year's Eve against DePaul. So I think it'd be great to get one nice win and then maybe have those three bye games that hopefully would not be too troublesome, to kind of maybe get Fisher a little bit more involved and get his game legs under him a little bit better before Big East play starts. And we'll see exactly what kind of team Marquette has heading into Big East play. But, you know, I remain cautiously optimistic that this team can have a nice year. I still don't think they're going to be a tournament team, but I hope they can be exciting enough and interesting enough that, you know, everyone is still very into this team and its future. And, you know, maybe we're talking about having a nice, you know, getting an NIT bid or something like that by the time we get into Big East play and get through Big East play. So
I think we'll continue to build here. Yeah, either way, people just need to respect the process. You know, if we lose to Arizona State, it's not the end of the world, assuming, you know, that there's enough learned from the process as we lose, you know, if we lose that game, that the coaches don't, you know, do anything untoward that cost the game or anything like that. Yeah. The players are going to learn. The coaches are going to learn. This is all building to this team being hopefully good at the end of the season and great next season. So, I think people just need to focus on the product on the floor in terms of improvement. And that's just going to kind of be my mantra that's why I never got too depressed over the Wisconsin game. I can see some pieces, some flashes there. This wasn't going to be a likely win for us anyway. Arizona State's probably a 50-50 toss-up. Again, as long as we get some positive results out of it, I think that's the critical thing, even more so than the win, even though we all want the win.
Yeah, I agree. And just like you said, respect the process, and adding Fisher is another big step in the process, because he's going to be a big part of this team this year and the next 2 years, which are going to be really, you know, where Wojo and his staff really kind of take a big step to putting the program where they really want it to be ultimately, and that's competing for Big East titles and trying to go deep into the tournament. But just interested to see that next step, and hopefully this podcast has some legs to it, so it's relevant where you listen to it on, you know, the Monday after the Wisconsin game, or on December 15th before the Arizona State game. Hopefully there's no breaking news of the sour kind between now and then. So hopefully nothing but good news from there on out. Again, you can always check us out on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann3. Phil is M-O-O-O-F
23. You can also hit us up at the team page. That's Cracked Sidewalks on the Twitter. And you can find us on the Cracked Sidewalks website. That's where we post the blogs. You can leave your comments there. Or on our Facebook page, there is a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page. And, of course, we're on iTunes, so you can take us with us wherever you go. Phil, any plans for you for finals week?
Not taking any finals.
Yeah, that's the way I enjoy finals week. Staying away from them forever. But hopefully
I'm going to do all the drinking of finals week without any of the actual finals taking.
And that's really the best part of it. Hope all the Marquette student athletes.
This is why being an adult is awesome.
It is truly, truly the best. Thanks for being with us, everyone. Until next time, seashells and balloons.